This is Deanna Spingola. It is Monday, October 8th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Matthias Chang, and his website is futurefastforward.com. He is the author of The Shadow Moneylenders, Future Fast Forward, The Zionist Anglo-American Empire Meltdown, and Brainwashed for War, Programmed to Kill, The Zionist Global War Agenda. And your books are wonderful. I have all three of them. And welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Thank you. Now, you are in Malaysia. You are of Chinese descent. You've been a barrister for 32 years. And you've always been against war. And so I can see why you wrote the book about war, because it's something that, well, it's something that I am very interested in, and it certainly is senseless, and it certainly does slaughter a lot of people. It's a terrible thing, and of course we know who's behind this. But in your latest book, The Shadow Moneylenders and the Global Financial Tsunami, that's kind of a scary book.
Why should it be scary?
Well, I think that most of us, or at least I can only speak for myself, but we have perceptions that have been given to us by the people that are basically behind the money scam, this huge hegemony, and so I think it is frightening to think that all of this could just implode at any time based on what other people do. In other words, we just simply do not have control over what is happening, or at least not in the big picture. But you indicate that if we understand what is happening, that we can do things that can protect our assets.
Right. But actually, if you have read my first volume of trilogy, the Future Fast Forward trilogy, in the Future Fast Forward Volume 1, I had in Chapter 1 entitled The Financial Mess in 2005, year 2005, I've actually forecasted the tsunami in 2728. If you recall, in Chapter 1, I spoke about the derivatives time bomb, right? And I've also stated very clearly how the five top banks in America controls over 95% of the derivatives time bomb. In fact, in that book, I underestimated the consequences of that time bomb, which the famous investor Warren Buffett has said that derivatives is in fact a time bomb. But I think all of us way back in 2000 to 2005 underestimated the extent of that time bomb when it exploded. But nevertheless, if you read in my book Volume 1, we have seen that I have tabled the key banks that was involved in all the frauds, and you will notice that at the end of the chapter I even stated that these banks were relying on drug money,
right,
the heroin, and they were all laundered by the five big banks. Now, if you could recall, I don't know how up to speed you are on the news. Recently, you can recall, I think it was reported in the New York Times, I believe, that the big banks were in fact laundering money in America and elsewhere. And one of the banks that was involved in money laundering in a very big scale was the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank Corporation, HSBC. And in the New York Times, it says that prosecutors were investigating the movement of money by global bank suspect. And the key suspect was HSBC, laundering money for the Mexican drug cartels. And they then were hauled up by the prosecutors, and HSBC came out with a public statement saying that they are prepared to pay a hefty fine if that can be resolved behind closed doors. And on the 9th of August 2012, there was a very reputable British publication called Private Eye, and they have exposed the fact that Britain, specifically the City of London, is still the largest money laundering capital of the world. So what all this is happening is not really surprising, because it is a cartel, and these cartels that spread all over the world have a very incestuous relationship. For example, Private Eye pointed out that Lord Green was one time the trade minister and member of the treasury, supposed to be involved in reforming British banks, right? Was at one time the CEO of Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank. So how can the current head of a treasury team investigating money laundering was from Hong Kong Shanghai Bank? So likewise, you see in Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, before the crisis, Bastions, Lehman Brothers, what have you, they are all involved in this. And these are the biggest financiers of the war party. And if people cannot link the two, the war is closely linked with the financial elites, then they are missing a big issue, and they will be easily misled, right, as to what will happen in the near future.
Right. Right. Of course, war has always been a very profitable activity. And you also link September 11th to all of this, and of course it got the U.S. military into Afghanistan, where they could develop the poppy agriculture over there, which is all part of this, correct?
Yes. See, the other thing is, when September 11th occurred, right? You will notice immediately, within an hour, less than an hour, everybody was pointing the fingers at the so-called terrorist Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, right? It was within an hour. And thereafter, year after year after, to today, after Osama bin Laden has been killed, right, by the special forces of the United States of America, I pointed out way back in 2001, September 11 took place, there's something very odd that's happening in America. And my friends in America were shocked when I told them to go to the official website of the FBI. Alright? And they asked me why. I just woke up the official website of the FBI. Now, these Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were in fact the actual perpetrators of September 11. How is it? In the official website of the FBI, Osama bin Laden is not indicted, and I repeat, is not indicted for the attack on Twin Towers. This will maybe come as a surprise to you, Dina.
Yeah, no, I knew that, because I had read it somewhere, perhaps in one of your books. And, in fact, he died of kidney failure in December of 2001 and was in an American hospital in the Middle East in July, where the CIA met with him. So, I mean, you know, the whole situation, it was just they blamed him because they wanted to go into the Middle East. They wanted to go into Afghanistan. They wanted to go into Iraq and drop bombs.
Precisely. You noticed recently in my website, I posted a press interview of Hillary Clinton. I call her Hillary Clinton as opposed to...
Yes.
And she said, admittedly, she agreed, she admitted, point blank, that the Al-Qaeda Mujahideens were organized and financed by the intelligence services of America, namely CIA and MI6, together with the Pakistani intelligence services, ISI. Alright? And she said that openly on television recently. And I've posted that in my website. You can check on my folder in my website, Urgent Immediate Attention. But more importantly, even before Hillary Clinton made that admission, or rather confession, Robin Cook, before he died, 2 weeks before he died, was in British Parliament, and he said that the name Al-Qaeda was in fact the name of a computer software, right, in the Arab Al-Qaeda is the base that contained each and every Mujahideen trained by the British intelligence services as well as the CIA. Alright? And Tony Blair, in the next few days after Robin Cook's expose in Parliament, admitted that Al-Qaeda was a creature of both the British and the US intelligence services. So you can see that wars are waged, right, for alternate motives which are not known to the normal people, what we call the Dojo Six Packs, right?
Right.
They don't understand, and that's why they can be so easily hoodwinked into believing, right, that they are under threat by so-called jihadists, Muslim fanatics. Again, you must understand that these Muslim fanatics, right, are financed by the so-called key ally of the Brits and the US, that is Saudi Arabia. Because you will notice that most of the jihadists that spawned Al-Qaeda, right, that was part of Al-Qaeda, were actually financed by the Saudis, because Saudi Arabia is the home of a virulent, deviant Islamic cult called the Wahhabism. And they have been financing all kind of Islamic madrasas, Islamic schools, indoctrinating Muslim youths to go on a jihad. And these people are misled into with all sorts of terrorist organizations. But you will notice that in all the mainstream media of the West, they never expose that Saudi Arabia are behind all these things. Alright? And now we see this happening recently in Libya and now in Syria, that the jihadists have been trained by the intelligence services and financed by Saudi Arabia, and now openly admitted by Qatar. So I think we have to see the linkage, right?
Right. Well, I think as early as 1984, the CIA supplied textbooks for Afghan students through USAID, yeah, and they were created at the University of Nebraska. And they had all kinds of horrible pictures and promoted warfare. So I mean, we've participated in this too by supplying all these incendiary textbooks.
Now, but you must very important notice, and a lot of Americans, a lot of people out there in the world, they do say that U.S. is responsible for this or that attack, fine, they attacked in Afghanistan and Iraq. But really, the people that's behind, really behind global warfare and the imperial agenda in the Middle East is actually British Superman.
The British?
Yes. They are the ultimate mastermind. And if you recall in my book, I quoted at length a speech given by Kissinger, I think on the 150th anniversary of the Royal Institute of Strategic Studies, where he said that all he knew about geopolitics derived from his experience from that institute and from his British colleagues. He went on to say that when he was the National Security Advisor and later Secretary of State, he revealed first and foremost to the British establishment, even before his own subordinates, on matters of security affecting America in the Middle East. Why would Kissinger say that? Alright? I would have thought he would confide in his to the president and to the US establishment. But he, in that speech, said clearly that he would rather confide first with the British than his own team in the US administration. Now that is an eye opener. I'm not surprised, because if you go back to history, you will see the hands of the British ruling party all over the Middle East. Alright, look at after the Second World War, you have the Sykes-Picot Agreement in 1916 that covered up the entire Middle East. You have the Balfour Declaration that opened the way for the establishment of Israel. Alright, and then the Second World War, how Churchill, right, literally induced Roosevelt to enter the war. So you cannot ignore the tentacles of the British establishment, which is essentially Zionist, and the role of Bank of England in all this whole scheme of things. And I mean, some of my friends in America were saying I'm a bit gruffy. America has been, for want of a better expression, acting as the armed force of the Zionist Anglo-American international elite. You notice, right, all the wars, post-Second World War, the cannon fodders are the young Americans. The cannon fodders. Not so much British. So, America is paying a very heavy price. And I hope that sooner or later, America will wake up. Because the American people have a wrong perception as if the world hates them. Right? Because Bush says, right, why do they hate us? The world doesn't hate American people. The world, in fact, is inspired by the US Constitution. And you recall in my book, I quoted even Ho Chi Minh, the arch enemy of America. Post-Second World War, Ho Chi Minh based the entire Vietnamese constitution on the American constitution. So, yet, despite that, America went to war against America. America went to war against other countries in the Middle East, in South America. But America is not the main country. It's Britain. Because Britain has over 300 years of imperial experience. The way they ruled India, the way they ruled and colonized Malaysia, then Malaya. In fact, what we see in Guantanamo Bay, in Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere, the torture, is nothing new to we in Malaysia. The waterboarding and what have you was first experimented in Malaya soon after the Second World War. When Japan was defeated, British came back to Malaya to reoccupy Malaya, and there was a huge resistance against the reoccupation by the British soldiers. And what it did was, for 12 years, the British army and their Commonwealth recruits, army from India, Africa, were sent to Malaya to oppress the Malayan people, and they used each and every torture method known to mankind. Then, in fact, waterboarding, as meted out in Guantanamo Bay in Abu Ghraib, I would consider mild compared to the waterboarding that was done to Malayan citizens then, between 1945 to the early 60s. You would have people bound by barbed wires, right, hands tied up, a hose shot into the throat of the victim, and water would be pumped until the stomach is bloated, and then they're stomped. The torch would storm on the stomach, and they would vomit the water. In the process, the lungs would be damaged. Some would choke on the water that's spitting up, and they would die. Some would die. Now, that is waterboarding, the most gruesome ones, as compared to one now in America. Now, if what has happened in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay, whereby they tie someone down, put a cloth over their face and pour water over that cloth to simulate drowning, I think that, even though it's very gruesome, very bad, cannot be compared to what took place in Malaya. So the British was there, right? And when America was invaded in Vietnam, it was the British, right, special forces, and those who were skilled in so-called counter-insurgency, were advising Americans, the hamlets in Vietnam, alright, to segregate the ordinary people, were actually derived from the concept of new villages in Malaya, whereby the British get all the people, the civilians, take them out from wherever they're staying, and corral them in special areas called new villages. It's actually a concentration camp, surrounded by barbed wires and soldiers, and they cannot leave the compound, right, except through very strict inspection, like what will happen now in your airports, you know, all ship search, what have you. And then they're only permitted to go out in and out of those so-called new villages, right, at a certain time. In fact, concentration camp. And that experience was applied in Vietnam. So, for us in Malaya, then Malaya, now Malaysia, we have memories of what the British did to us. And recently, if you are aware, in Britain, there was a massacre by the British soldiers in a village called Batang Tali, which is the Malayan equivalent of Malay massacre in Vietnam. And when the survivors, the families, brought an action, legal action in England recently, the court said, well, it happened 60 years ago, it's too long an affair, there's no bother, there shouldn't be any bother to revive such memories, dismiss the case. Can you imagine that? A war crime. So what we see in happening now in the world, it actually has its roots in British colonialism, you know.
Right. I think also they practice these same things, the waterboarding in the Philippines, when America invaded in 1898. They used waterboarding. And I think that, of course, as you say, this is a British construct. And we never hear about these things. And of course, they escape all culpability. They never answer to their crimes, and yet they have this this persona of being democratic, and of course Americans also think the same thing, that we have some sort of exclusivity and that whatever we do is okay, and we project all of our crimes on our, in fact, our targets.
Yes, I think there's one thing I want to emphasize in your radio show.
Could you talk a little bit louder?
I said, one thing I'd like to emphasize in your radio show is this. I would appeal to all Americans, to ordinary people, to those expats. Please do not have a distorted version of the world. The people of the world do not hate Americans. Right? They always hold a distinction between the people and the regime, the administration, the elites. I'll give you an example, right? As you know, that I was involved heavily in the war crimes tribunal against Bush and Blair in Malaysia, and the war crimes tribunal found them guilty. It's the first war crimes tribunal that was conducted, right, exactly like a court proceedings, where there were judges, right, seven of them, qualified judges, retired judges of the Supreme Court of Malaysia and the Court of Appeal, real judges, okay, not volunteers, okay. And then we had a full-fledged team of prosecutors and also a full-fledged team of defense lawyers, so that no one can accuse this tribunal of a kangaroo court. And I can assure you, during a hearing of the war crimes tribunal against Bush and Blair, defense team fought tooth and nail on every legal issue. And what was interesting was, we called witnesses who were victims of torture from Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib. They testified the heinous torture, right, by soldiers and by the CIA interrogators as well as the British interrogators. Now, what I'm telling you is so remarkable because, in the course of their testimony, one would have thought that they would spew anger and hatred against the torturer. Alright? I even brought to Malaysia some former US soldiers, Marines, who fought in Iraq. But for that experience, when we went back to America, they went through a traumatic experience. Some went to drugs, some took up alcohol and were alcoholics. I mean, to cut the story short, they realized their mistakes and they came forward to testify. Again, what I'm trying to say is this, that the victims of the war, of the torture, when they were testifying in that war crimes tribunal, the entire demeanor, disposition, had evoked even no anger or hate against the torturers. That was remarkable. That, to me, that was an eye opener as to the courage, as to the compassion and humanity. And we asked them, despite the pain and suffering, the torture, the humiliation which they themselves suffered as well as their families, why had they not, you know, go on the so-called slogan mongering, what have you, and condemn each and every American? And in the testimony, right, and I think these, I mean, I think say they are like saints to me, they said that whoever tortured them, the soldiers were sent to Iraq, Afghanistan, were cannon fodders. They don't know what they're doing. They were brainwashed into war. So the anger is not against these people who have been brainwashed, but against the ultimate leaders, the neocons, the Bush, the Cheney, the Condoleezza Rice, right, the Deborah Spive, you name it. You name them, they were all there. And I think it took a lot of courage and a lot of, I think, humanity and their faith in their religion to be able to come to Malaysia to testify them. And I think America should know that these victims had the strength of character and the compassion to forgive. Because what they want is global peace. And I think if you could, in future, Dorito show, talk to American citizens, your fellow Americans, that the world does not hate America. Why? It's a very important point. Despite what is going on in the world, despite the atrocities in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and elsewhere, people are making a distinction. But what is important? There are also people out there, Zionists and the war party and warmongers, who wants to create a situation whereby people will hate people. Alright? To create confusion, alright? To create misunderstanding, and this is one of the reasons why in America you have that pastor, Terry Jones, and those other fanatics who purposely come up with films and cartoons demonizing Islam and demonizing the Prophet Muhammad, knowing that in the less educated communities, the less educated and less exposed Muslims in the Middle East and elsewhere would react in a violent way, whereby they will come up in demonstration to condemn America and Americans. And this has been shown on television across the world. Unfortunately, there are Muslims who are emotional, who has not applied their rational mind to say, we should not be baited to respond like that. Alright? Now, my thesis that this provocation against the Muslim people so that they will react in such a way as to fit in, right, the picture created in the minds of the Americans and Europeans that Muslims are emotional fanatics is because soon after that demonstration, right, Netanyahu said that, you see, you cannot allow Iran to have bombs, the nuclear bombs, because giving Iran nuclear bombs is no different from giving nuclear war bombs to Muslim fanatics that went on a rampage throughout the world, right? So here you have a Zionist, a war criminal, a war party, alright, giving this information, creating misunderstanding against Iran, when even your own intelligence services say that Iran is not embarking on any nuclear weapons. Even the IAEA found no evidence of this weaponization. And in fact, the only country in the world that's most scrutinized by the IAEA is Iran. So here you have this phenomena of Muslim being demonized, right? And sadly, I have to say, and I've been telling Muslims throughout the world, I've been telling them, like, don't take the bait, right? Don't react, because if you react, you will be giving yourself, right? You'll be basically acting in a way which the Americans and Europeans, right, perceive them to be as such. But thank God, there are other same Muslim leaders in the world who have condemned such reaction. But unfortunately, right, this has happened as a result of those attacks against Islam and the Prophet Muhammad. I live in a Muslim country. I'm a Catholic. I'm a minority. And I have no fear of Islam. I have no fear of these Muslims. If you engage them properly and reason with them, they're no different from you and me or from the Joseph Smiths. They value family, they value privacy, we value democratic rights, the freedom of expression, the freedom of speech. So, what happens in reality has been camouflaged and hidden away from the American people. And I hope in time to come, you will be able, you hope you'll find time to interview some of these progressive modern Islamic leaders who will give you a different picture of what you see on television.
Oh, right. I have interviewed, I'm hearing an echo. I think, I'm not sure why, but I have interviewed people, one gentleman, Dr. Meraki, who was from Afghanistan and has been living in the United States. He wrote a book called Afghanistan After Democracy, and he has many, many, many pictures in the book about the children who have been so damaged because of the depleted uranium, and they're born with all kinds of grotesque deformities. And so I do know some Muslim people, and they are fine people, and as you say, they are just like the rest of us. They simply want to be left in peace. They don't want their resources seized by foreigners. They don't want their lands bombed by the U.S. or anybody else. And I'm not, as you say, we're brainwashed. The average person here in America is brainwashed. And this happens through the media, whether they're looking at entertainment or news or whatever. In some of the situation, the entertainment shows on TV, they always bring up, when they can, Muslim terrorism and that kind of thing. And it's just so pervasive throughout our culture, and so people do they go in and they sign up to go to war because they're so brainwashed, as you indicated in your book. I mean, from the time that they're little children and learn to play with guns and also the Pentagon, I believe you also mentioned, actually works with the entertainment industry to develop games for children to play with so that they can learn how to shoot faster and more accurately. And it's a terrible situation.
I agree. But more important now, Dina, my main worry is this. Why, in my book, I say that there will be more wars coming in the near future. Maybe even the next World War, right? Some of the neo-cosmic World War IV, because the Third World War was a Cold War. And what I'm saying, and I want to share my views with your audience and your listeners, is this. Wars have always been waged externally by countries who have immense financial and economic problems at home, right? Because in order to avoid insurrection or civil and social upheaval at home, the easiest way to keep the population down, to corral them, and make us listed, is to have an external war. So that when you have external war, if you don't rally behind the government, you are deemed unpatriotic, alright? You are deemed a traitor. Now, in America now, what's happening is very frightening. If I was American now, alright, if I had money, I would leave the country. Because the Patriot Act, alright, and its various forms, has laid the groundwork, right, for a police state, in fact, for military rule, FEMA and what have you. And of course, with the executive order by Obama, that he has the power, alright, which is the extension of what Bush has done. Bush says that he has the power to kill, right, any foreigner who's a terrorist, who is a threat to America, he sent any special force or the drones to kill anyone overseas who he deems a threat, with or without a trial, to kill them, to assassinate them. Obama has now extended that policy to say the President of America has a right to assassinate and kill even an American who he deems to be a threat to the security of America. This is frightening, right? And now, with the economic situation in America so depressive, to me it's a matter of time before the elite will unleash the most brutal military rule in America ever seen. Why do I say that? It's because, let's look at it. The stats since 2007 till now shows America's economy was in the worst depression, I emphasize the word, in the worst depression than the first depression in 1929. But the mass media and the so-called establishment economists call it the Great Recession. They didn't want to use the word depression because that would be too mind-boggling, too fearful for the ordinary Joe Sixpacks. So they call it the Great Recession. And they keep on saying that recovery will be around the corner, employment will improve in the near future. It's all a pack of lies, you know. Now, in my book, the first volume, Future Fast Forward, I already put out then, which I underestimated, that the derivatives shadow banking system was few hundred trillions. And when I wrote that book, many people condemned me and saying that I was exaggerating. How could it be trillions? Right? They can't even figure or visualize the cost of trillions. What? They can't even visualize and understand the cost of billions. And you already do six packs and all the people throughout the whole world can't even understand and comprehend millions. We're talking about the shadow banking system in the trillions. And in 2007, before the collapse, the global tsunami, I gave a red alert to my friends all over the world that the economy will explode because, as at that time, the shadow economy was 800 trillion. Not a typo, not a mispronunciation. It's not 800 billion, 800 trillion. You know?
Oh my.
I said that if 10% of that amount will go to default, it'd be 80 trillion. A mind-boggling figure. More than the global GDP of 63 trillion, of which the GDP of the US then was 14 trillion. So when I used 10%, everybody seems surprised. They are the conspiracy theorists. They are mad. So I said, okay, I'll halve it to 5%. 40 trillion. And then say, advise, stop it. You're making a fool of yourself. You lose all credibility. So I said, okay, I'll reduce further to 2.5%. 20 trillion. Even then, they say, right, this nonsense. Yet you recall that after Ron Paul demanded the audit of the Fed, alright, as to how much money they siphoned off, they printed, right, to offset the global tsunami, the Fed was exposed to having given out 16 trillion. Emphasize 60 trillion. And this is the official, alright, audit of the Fed by Ron Paul. So when I say 20 trillion has gone, vanished, vaporized, the losses, it's not far-fetched, because the Fed has to issue, print digitally and otherwise, 16 trillions to finance the shadow banking system. Now, if it was 800 trillion way back in 2008, what about now? If I say 800 trillion and I was condemned as an idiot, a dumb skull, and a kumfuk, I would like to, to draw your attention to an article by a famous financial analyst called Jim Sinclair, alright, and he said that the social value of all outstanding derivatives now total approximately 1.144 quadrillion. Quadrillion is 1,000 trillion.
Yeah.
Right? It's more than what I have estimated. Alright? I say it's 300 trillion. Now he says it's more than 800 trillion. It's over 1,000 trillion. It's quadrillion. Alright? And his published figures, and he said these figures were obtained from the Bank of International Settlement. Now bear in mind that the top 5 US banks, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, alright, and one more I can't remember, and they control 90% of the global derivatives market. They control 90% of the global shadow money, the shadow banking system. So they're still in shits. There's no way that the Fed, having pumped 16 trillion to save the American banks as well as overseas banks, can solve the problem. Because as we're talking about quadrillion, and interesting enough, there was another author called website, I think, a blog called Washington's Blog, where this gentleman also quoting a famous derivatives expert called Paul Wilmot, W-I-L-M-O-T-T, Paul Wilmot, who has written a lot of books and articles on the shadow banking system, said that the exposure is 1.2 quadrillion, which is 20 times the size of the world economy. So let's take 10% is 100 trillion, 5% is 50 trillion, 12% is 25 trillion, post 2008. So they have not solved the problem. The banking system is collapsing, it's based on fraud, right? And Bloomberg reported that the executive chairman of Templeton Asset Management, Mark Mobius, was saying that there will be another financial crisis around the corner, and I quote, because we haven't solved any of the things that caused the previous crisis. If you ask Mr. Are the derivatives regulated? No. Are you still getting growth in derivatives? Yes. The global financial crisis 3 years ago was caused in part by the proliferation of such products, right, within the US system and exported outside the US system to the European Union. Okay? So, now there were some of these bankers, they give the explanation that, well, if you net off what someone is owing and what someone is gaining by way of profits, then everything will be equal out, isn't it? I hope you follow me, Dina. Say for example, right, you owe you $1 million, I'm a debtor, isn't it? And you are the creditor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if I lose 1 million, you gain 1 million. So the 1 million still remains in the system, am I right?
Right.
Right. So it's what we call netting off, right? And then you in turn maybe owe some money to another party, right? And there's the net off, right? He owes you some money. So end of the day, the net figure, right, will be a credit balance. Okay? This was the logic they explained. Not to worry, we have this netting system, right? So at the end of the day, the actual liability or exposure is very small. That is a lie. Why, dear, is this? Remember, when these people gamble in the derivative global casino, alright, they were betting with each other. Okay, so for example, I bet with you, right, on a derivative product, say, 100 million, okay? Alright, you are betting with me that on a certain certain event, it will happen. If I lose, I have to pay you 100 million, alright? If I win, you pay me 100 million. We are betting on the event happening. It could be even, right, whether there will be earthquake in Kyoto. You follow me?
Right.
It can be anything, okay? You're betting. It's a casino, okay? Now, obviously, Dina might think, well, look, if I bet Papayas and there's 600 million, what if he loses and doesn't pay? Right? What if he loses and doesn't pay? So what you do is this. You will buy what we call a credit default swap. A nice, funny, stupid name, which acts as insurance. The word credit default means if I default, right, on my bet with you, it's 100 million. Okay? So what you do is, you go to an insurance company like AIG, right?
Mm-hmm.
And buy a credit default swap, which is a financial term for insurance policy, meaning that if Matthias Chang, when he loses the bet with you, doesn't pay up, AIG will pay up, right?
Right.
The insurance company will pay up, right?
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, this whole scam, this whole casino, therefore rests on the integrity and the security and liquidity of the insurance company, am I right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you say we need net off, right, there'll be small exposure because you are insured, right? If I default, you are insured, right?
Right.
By default, you can go to AIG to be paid. That sounds kind of paper, isn't it? But in doing, what happens? When Lehman Brothers collapse, banks collapse, right?
Yes.
No credit of banks went to AIG. AIG says, I don't have the money. Alright? I don't have the money. So if the insurance company don't have the money to pay in the event I default, will you be repaid? No, isn't it? And you're not repaid. If you as a bank is not repaid, what will you show on your balance sheet? You have a loss, right? Of 100 million, am I right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And on my balance sheet, I have a liability of 100 million, am I right?
Right.
Precisely. And AIG, who sold you the insurance, the credit default swap, all right, is also in a liability situation, isn't it? Because he must pay up, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's why. And then what happened was, Goldman Sachs, okay, clever enough, he knew they were selling. See, Goldman Sachs was betting, like, all these further products, and knew they would collapse. And knew that AIG would not be able to pay. Took another insurance policy, another credit default swap, against AIG for defaulting.
Oh my goodness.
And when it collapsed, what happened? Right? The Treasury Secretary, Bernanke, had no choice but to dish up all these monies, salvage AIG, so that AIG in turn could pay Goldman Sachs, could pay JP Morgan, and those other banks, alright, who won on the bet but were not paid by those defaulting banks. bastards and even brothers. Alright? But what they paid out was only the tip of the iceberg. Because the rest of the default, they say, keep it under wraps. Don't declare default yet. But of course they can't cover up bastards and Lehman Brothers who are default. Or Washington Mutual, am I right?
Right.
Country Y. So those that was exposed, alright, they cover up. Those whose debts were not exposed yet, they swept it under the table, under the carpet, and keep it under wraps. Alright? So now think about it. If what has been exposed required 16 trillion, alright, to reimburse the bank, to make those banks balance sheet, what if the full 10% is exposed? Bernanke and the Fed can't print $100 trillion.
Yes.
Hyperinflation.
Yes.
US dollar will be toilet paper. And the people in America will not tolerate this. It's a fraud. And why should taxpayers, right, be taxed to pay this debt? I mean, these are the Wall Street fraudsters, banksters, that have been defrauded, right? Okay? The system. Use the system, right? So why should those expats, teachers, right, and other people be taxed to pay this? And the joke is, when they were stabilized to taxpayers' money, this bloody bankers get this bonus or the reimbursements from taxpayers' money.
Yes.
They didn't recover the debt. They were given on a silver platter the money to recapitalize the bank. And the audacity of those banks is to say that, right?
Yes.
We 100% we didn't have to depend on the government for our wealth. We were the one who worked our butts out to be rich. That's what Robin said. Alright? The 40%, 47% are parasites. Okay? Not that I support Obama, they're all the same kind. But
right,
the way they paint the picture as if they didn't depend on the government. Alright? But they got a head out from Bernanke, from the Fed. Now, this 16 trillion was instead given to the economy, alright, to finance the public works, right, to re-employ, to retrain the American people. There will be unemployment. But this money was sent out, not to US banks, but to European banks like Commercial Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays Bank. Because they're all interconnected. To show up the rich at the expense of the poor. Now, if this gets out, if those expats understand this fraud, this Ponzi scheme, I'm telling you, there will be a revolution tomorrow. There will be a revolution. That is why all the mainstream media in America, right, this issue is such a simple issue, so difficult to understand. That those six facts will never revolt, right, against the establishment. Even though, right, they may have an inkling that Wall Street, right, has done a lot of funny things, okay? They have not understand, they have not understood, right, the true impact of this fraud, okay? And I've tried to show in my book, right, as simple as the language as I can write to explain to people. Even then it's difficult, right? And you'll notice in my book and my introduction, I even talked about LIBOR, right? Remember?
Uh-huh.
It's LIBOR. They manipulated LIBOR. The Barclays Bank, a few big banks, right? Right? LIBOR is the London Interbank Offered Rate. That is the rate of interest which, right, banks borrow from each other. Okay? Now they manipulated the rate. So they make more money. So in my book, in my introduction of the Shadow Moneylenders, alright, I explain in that particular page, right, how they use the LIBOR as part of the derivative transactions, because interest rate swaps represent 80% of derivatives. Okay? And I explain it very simply. And there, one creature, right, I said, right, if I can read out to you the message, I said, hearing who is a sucker? Pardon my language, because I have to be blunt. Bankers and central banks control interest rates. The present crisis shows all too clearly when banks and hedge funds acting on behalf of the shadow money lenders demand a reduction in rates, central bank just told the line. So if you are a non-banker punter, that is a gambler, or we call it investors, gambling with the shadow money lenders on movements in interest rates, you start from the very beginning at a decisive disadvantage. You are a sucker, gentlemen. In the above example, the parties are speculating on interest rate fluctuation. I said earlier that derivatives trading is based on an underlying asset, and that it could be stocks, bonds, etc. To test your understanding of the above, apply the principles to purchase of shares, stocks, etc. etc. So here we have banks, right, controlling interest rates and betting with so-called investors. How can you win when I control the rate?
Exactly. Why do people even invest their money in the stock market that they have no control over? And certainly, with the various crashes over the generations, people should know better than to place their money there.
I say, Dina, say for example now, you borrow money, right, from a bank, okay? And it's interest rate, say for example, 10%, just for argument's sake, right, it's easy to calculate, right?
Talk a little bit louder.
I say, for example, right, you borrow money, bank, say, 100,000, right, at 10%, fixed interest rates, right? It's easy to calculate, like, use 10% of 100,000, okay? Therefore, your interest rate is, you have to pay 10,000, right? And you were induced to believe, okay, the interest rate, right, will be fluctuating, okay? And you bought a interest rate swap, okay? Now, if I, a bank, selling that product, controls the rate of interest, right? If you expect high, okay, and of course it goes up, I have to pay you, alright? If I manipulate to bring the interest rate down, then you lose the bet, you pay me, as I explained in my book. So, you will always lose when you play against the bank.
Yes.
Puts you the interest rates. And that was, that's why the expose was mind-boggling, and they covered up when it was exposed that these big banks, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Barclays, HSBC, Royal Bank of Scotland, they were controlling LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate. Now LIBOR is a so-called gold standard of interest rates throughout the whole world. When someone borrowed money in US dollars or whatever, they were quoted LIBOR rate. You follow me? So that rate applies throughout the world as the benchmark. Okay?
Right.
In Malaysia, we have what we call CLIBOR, the Kuala Lumpur Interbank Offered Rate, which is used in a very small market domestically, right? But when we borrow money from, say, an offshore bank, a foreign bank, and a Malaysian borrow money from Barclays Bank, Deutsche Bank, right, JP Morgan, Boston, right, whatever, the interest rate will be called LIBOR, right? The London Interbank Rate. Now, I'll be a sucker to borrow money from an offshore bank based on interest rates, right, LIBOR interest rates. Now that I know, alright, now that the world knows that they are manipulated rate. Of course, before that, everybody thought, right, wow, libel is sacrosanct. Right? You can't manipulate libel. But it doesn't. And it's compounded now the fraud. So now there are a lot of people now who intend to sue those banks, right?
Mm-hmm.
How could you manipulate the rate of interest, right? In the result in which the bank makes more money than what I'm entitled to make. You follow me?
Yes.
So see, when this deal came out, okay, it was reported in, right? The Wall Street Journal, okay, the New York Times. But how many people in the world from my country, in your country, Joseph Specs, read Wall Street Journal? They don't. The local press, the county press, they don't report these things. So no way would, right, your ordinary people in America who took a loan, right, from the bank, a mortgage loan, okay, based on certain interest rates. But a bank then borrows money, right, from another bank based on the libel. Okay? So you can get screwed by the banks.
Right.
The ordinary people don't understand that. And that's why they make it so convoluted and so difficult to understand. Not because it's difficult, because they use jargons, alright, to confuse people. Like, if you don't believe me, Gina, just pick up the phone, call any university lecturers, professors on economics. They can't explain to you derivatives. Why? By way of analogy, right? Say a doctor. If a doctor is a family doctor, a general practitioner, alright?
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to cure a cough, influenza, what have you, alright?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, if it's a cardiac problem, you go to a cardiologist. If it's cancer, you go to an oncologist, what have you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the cardiologist would know anything more than cardiology, am I right?
Right, everybody's compartmentalized.
Nicely. So no one knows about all these things. Even bankers, I've talked to bankers, both in my country and other countries, right? You're already bankers, your branch manager, right in the high street. You ask them, right, what the hell is general money banking? What the hell is derivatives? They can't explain to you. Because his job is to give simple mortgage loans to every 2-6 banks and small businessmen. He won't understand this. This transaction goes to trillions. He will tell you, Dina, you're talking rubbish. No such thing as, right, an 800 trillion shadow banking system. He will tell you, you are mad to talk about quadrillion derivatives casino. But that is reality. So if you Google Jim Sinclair, right, derivatives, in Google, you get the figures right here. Alright? If you Google international Bank of International Settlements, the quarterly report, you get the figures. If you Google the Office of the Controller of Currency, your country, you get the figures. But they are so detailed that it's very difficult to track them. It took me months, you know, to trace the money trail. It took me months, hours, you know, of collating, right? Checking one column and another column. They bury you in details. So unless you're very persistent, you have some basic knowledge of finance and economics, you can't get it. Okay? Now, if you could, for your readers' reference, in my book at page 147, I enclose a diagram of a derivative product sold by Goldman Sachs, okay? At page 147.
Right.
It's called the GSAM slide, okay? This is a product that was created by Goldman Sachs. And all the rating agencies, there were 12 products, right? Rated all of them AAA. AAA is the best investment grade, alright?
Uh-huh.
Okay. It was fraudulent. After the crash, after the tsunami, when they investigated all these products, they were in fact junk.
Right.
They were down rated to junk. Is it a fraud? They sold to the pension funds. Your pension funds, right?
Yes.
Expect pension France, right, were innocent because they were managing all these funds, right? Hundreds of billions, right? They must guarantee a return to you, all right? And stock market is too volatile. They have to invest in AAA assets. And so you have Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers coming up with all these so-called fraudulent products, and with the connivance of the rating agencies, get paid by these banks for their ratings, get them AAA ratings, and it was sold to the pension funds on the assumption that if they rate AAA, there will be a stream of income, alright, like interest payments on the bank loan, right?
Right, and people depend on that. They trust these bankers. I don't understand why they would even trust the bankers after the history.
Like dividends payments, right?
Yes.
But there was no such payments. It was all fraudulent. It was junk. It was worse than junk, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was worse than what happened, right? Way back in the 80s, you know the junk bonds, Milken, things like that?
Right.
Milken was many puppets. Compared to these presidential banksters, these fraudsters, right? And guess what? Those economists that devise all these mathematical models in which enable these banks to come up with these sophisticated, so-called sophisticated products to sell to mutual funds, these fanciful rocket science mathematical models, okay, were awarded by the Nobel Committee Prize in Economics. Can you imagine that?
Amazing.
Look at this LTCM, Long-Term Credit Management,
mm-hmm.
Lab, in 1998. They were headed by two Nobel laureates.
Really?
Who were given that Nobel Prize for their research into derivatives. For their research in, catch it, anticipating and managing risk. That their so-called financial model is so brilliant that they could evaluate and value risks. And therefore, investment, buying their products, would have minimum risk and would have maximum return. Because these so-called rocket scientists, Nobel laureates, have come up with incredible mathematical models, alright?
Mm-hmm.
It's what, dear? Last year, 2010. I won't mention the name. A Nobel laureate came to Malaysia. He was one of those economists that created a mathematical model that was so-called more advanced than the model created by those two economists in the LTCM fiasco, the Black-Scholes model. Then this mathematical model is called Black-Scholes, BLACK-SCHOLES, Black-Scholes model. And this economist in Malaysia says his model was an advancement of that model, the previous model, right? And he in turn was given the Nobel Prize. He came to Malaysia, oh my god. It was champagne, standing room only. Everybody was awed by this economist, the well-read, right? And he was talking. You could see the left blind, one eye is king, so to speak. And of course, there were also economists in Malaysia. In order to cover up their stupidity and ignorance, pretended to understand what he was saying.
Ah, yes. And of course, the Nobel Peace Prize and the Nobel this prize and all the prizes they give out, these are the elite just awarding other elite.
Precisely. Put this right. So he was talking. So what I did was, since his mathematical model is to anticipate risk, and minimize risk, thereby giving better returns to investors. We popped the question to him. Since you're so brilliant, and you were given the Nobel Prize in Economics in the area of risk management and anticipating risks. How come you failed to anticipate 2007-2008 global tsunami, the collapse of the shadow money banking system, for which your mathematical model was the basis of those trades? Guess what? You hear the pin drop. You hear the pin drop.
My goodness.
He could answer. And that fraud, Foster was exposed. But the point is, this dinner, a lot of people dare not stand up in such a gathering to take them on. Because, emotionally, psychologically, people will be intimidated to take on a Nobel laureate, right?
Of course. Of course.
Science, so-called rocket science subject called economics and risk. It's all this, terminology, alpha, back time, all this nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
For fear that he throws one back at you, you can't answer. But what we did was very simple. We didn't want to get nitty-gritty. Because what is the essence of this theory? Of this model? Anticipation of risk. What risk is more dangerous than the collapse of the market, isn't it?
Right.
That is the biggest risk of all, isn't it?
Yes.
You can't see the elephant in the room. Right? You must be blind, isn't it?
Right.
So, if he, the Nobel laureate, can't even see the elephant in the room, as given an award, a prize, in economics by the Nobel Committee, right? How can you ever trust these guys anymore? Right? These are so-called phony economics.
Sure.
And I call them with the PhD, right? Doctorate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And after the seminar, someone asked me, you know, Mr. Chang, you know, you took them on. You don't have a PhD. He has a PhD, he's a Nobel laureate. So I say, the PhD stands for phony donkeys.
Yes.
I said that, right? That the lesser ones, the MSc, master screw ups, and those BSc in economics were bullshit scientists. And we have to really take them on. Really take them on. And we don't have to really know everything about the rocket science, about all these derivatives. All we need to know is essence. Is the essence. Because the word derivatives comes from the word derived, right?
Uh-huh.
That's something. So, I use the example of a house. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
You have the foundation, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the first story, second story, third story, or whatever, alright? The first story, right, is strength or stability, alright, is derived from the solidity and integrity of the foundation, am I right?
Right, yeah, you have to have a good foundation.
If it's strong, it will support the first story, okay? If the foundation, right, is strong enough to support five stories, you build five stories. If the foundation is strong enough to support 10 stories, you can build 10 stories. Alright? So, if the foundation, alright, okay, because a derivative is derived from a initial asset, the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So, if it's a mortgage derivative, it means that the underlying asset must be the loan, alright?
Right.
So, a borrower. So, for example, you borrow, say for example, 300,000 to buy a house or whatever, right? That is the foundation, right? That's the asset, that's the foundation of derivatives trade. Because whatever future trades, right, based on this mortgage, right, this 300,000 loan you took from, say, a credit union or whatever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You are credit worthy and you can repay the loan. That is a strong foundation, am I right?
Right.
You won't suffer a loss. You will not be foreclosed. This is a sound mortgage, alright? And your installment payments will provide a stream of income and a profit by way of interest, am I right?
Right.
So, that is a solid foundation. So, if I create a derivative product, alright, the first layer, I can say these derivatives will guarantee you, Mr. Chang, if you invest this right, of 24 months of income streams based on the installment payments by Dina and in this element. Follow me?
Uh-huh.
I can therefore buy this product, okay, from the bank. Okay?
Right.
But if, for example, is where these funny loans come about, right, you know, the banks, okay, know that they can offload this mortgage to someone else, okay, to the investment banker. They will then create as much loan as possible and sell it to the investment banker, return sell it to someone else. So the more mortgage they create, the more derivatives product they can create.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't care whether the borrower is of sound standing. So they're willing to sign on the paper to take a mortgage. So in the end, what happened was, they were giving loans to people who can't pay. These were debt loans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this loan repackaged and sold up as investment products. That caused a crisis.
Right. And of course, we have all the outsourcing of labor. So even if a person was responsible to begin with, maybe they lose their job a year later because of all the outsourcing, and then they can't pay. So either way, this is a big catastrophe.
And that now, right, the irony of this is, right, these poor people, right, so through the ignorance, were induced to enter these unfair transactions, and now have their house foreclosed, they're homeless, they're on stamps, right, food stamps.
Right, which a taxpayer pays for.
Precisely. Okay, so wait. Now, if they understand that their poverty, their foreclosure is a result of a fraud perpetrated by the banks. Okay? Okay?
Yes.
And created by so-called this economist Nobel laureates, they would rise up. And that's why I'm warning you to tell your audience that America may have to go to war just to divert attention from the domestic situation.
Oh, yes. Sure, absolutely.
You know, and this frightens me. And this frightens me. Because you will notice now that America has a tradition of, right, you know, people owning guns for self-defense against, right?
Mm-hmm.
Armed robbers, what have you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There will kind of time will come when the government, your government, will outlaw gun possession.
Oh, it's happening now, yes.
And will clamp down on your people, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid that if there is social unrest, right, they can't cope. And in my book, I've said there'll be blood in the streets. And it's already started in Europe. See, the mainstream media is not reporting. Every day there are demonstrations, there are fights and engagement with the police all over.
Mm-hmm.
In Portugal, in Greece, okay? In England, it happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure in America, there are areas where there were huge engagement between the public and the police, right? The Occupy Wall Street, the way they were treated by the police, is only the beginning, the tip of the iceberg. Because I don't see how America, the Fed, okay, can solve the problem. But you can, if I'm already in debt, giving me more money, more debt, will not solve the problem.
No.
Right? It's like giving a drug addict more drugs.
Sure.
Or the alcoholic more alcohol. Alright? Instead of giving money to relief, right? So the government supporting, giving jobs, creating jobs for the people, they're diverting all this money to save the banks.
Mm-hmm.
You got five big banks, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, JP Morgan was a collapse. I can assure you the banking system will not collapse. Because why? Because most of the people in America, those expats, they don't bank JP Morgan. They bank the credit union, the small banks, right?
Mm-hmm.
For your normal trade. Okay? your salary is deposited in the bank, you withdraw some money to pay your groceries, what have you. Alright?
Mm-hmm.
Those banks can continue surviving and doing business because they're not exposed to this scam, this scam. It's the big banks. So America can safely close down JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citibank. It means that Wall Street collapses. But the state banks, the county banks, the smaller banks, the credit unions will survive. But government and the Fed will not want the people to know that. It was saying if Citibank, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan collapse, the world will collapse. That is a myth. That's a lie. That is a lie. Because that's what happened to our country in 1997, 1998. Okay? The foreign banks came, alright, and tried to rape our country. Financial rape. And we say, piss off. Seriously. We impose exchange controls. Okay? And capital controls. Right?
Right.
And we allow our currency to fluctuate. We put a fixed rate. It's like the casino, right? You know? And so we change the rules. And that's it. And our people are protected. They were trying to destroy the economy so they can pick up right bargains. Buy up companies and bargain prices. You will notice that the rich consortiums, the private equity funds, which are buying property and companies that have suffered as a result of this tsunami at rock bottom prices.
And that's what they've always done in this country.
Precisely. So the small man gets clobbered, gets raped financially, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not changed. But the rich, they're getting away with it. What you see now is a huge wealth transfer. Never before in the history of America or the world. So much money has been transferred from one sector of the economy, one sector of the population to another, to the 1%. Seriously, the 1%. Right? Every crisis, financial crisis, did not happen by accident.
No, it's all planned.
It is engineered.
Mm-hmm.
And Goldman Sachs knew it in advance collapse because they bought swaps against those companies that was going to collapse. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening now.
Yes.
So, I hope the American people, somehow or other, will wake up. Because there's so much people outside the world can do. Right?
Right.
People now that hold the destiny in their hands.
Indeed.
In the country, you have so much human resource, so much innovative talent. Right? But that has been blindsided, outsourced, and what you have left is not even a skeleton.
Right.
Right? So, I think, I don't know how American people think about it. You have to organize, you know, and get the message out in simple language, maybe by way of diagrams or cartoons, what have you. Because if you write a huge book on it, how many people read?
Right. Yeah, people don't read enough anymore. They don't read books. They watch videos. I think video is a good way of presenting ideas.
So I think it's simplify the message. Get the essence.
Right.
It's enough to understand the essence.
Right. And you've certainly given us the essence of what is going on in this interview. And I really appreciate it very much.
And that's why I worry for young people in America. The war, they are the first to go out.
Right. Yes.
Look at the Afghan war.
Yeah. It was waged for one purpose, and here it is. You know, it started in the fall of 2001. And here we are, still there.
It's the longest war in history.
Yes.
Now, he says, Obama says, right, that we draw down.
Yeah, right.
What exposed those young people to further massacre?
Yes.
Interesting fact is that, right? I mean, Taliban is no angels, you know, the bastards. But anyway, when it took over, they destroyed all the poppy fields. All the poppy fields were kind of destroyed.
Right.
Asian, right?
Yeah, the culture, the libraries, they destroy everything that has any meaning and any historical value.
But then, their country, I said, I don't think sending young people to America.
Talk a little bit louder.
I said sending young people to America was not the problem.
No, of course not. It just creates more problems for them and for the people that they're attacking.
And the blowback. Because look at Soviet Union. Soviet Union went in to Afghanistan. What happens? Right? They suffered defeat.
Right.
Alright? The British went in there, also were defeated. So why did America go there?
Right.
To me, it's a waste of healthy young Americans.
It's squandering the youth and the best people in the country. The future of the country is squandered in warfare.
One full generation. One full generation. And there's also precisely another way of diverting and employing the army. Right?
Right.
You chuck is out of the employment market. So they reduce the unemployment figure. So they're tempering measure. Right? If you outsource all your factories, for example, Africa, Asia, right?
Right.
Manufacturing is hard to solve.
It is, absolutely. Production is what we should base the value of the country on, is what we produce. I mean, it's amazing. We've become a service industry country and not producing anything.
Even the service industry outsourced since then. You know?
Sure.
Those, those call centers, you buy a product.
Right.
You hear a voice with a funny accent, right? In India.
Right. Right, and some of that is in-source labor. They invite other people to come into the country because those people will work cheaper than the Americans. And we just think we're talking to a person in a foreign country when, in fact, they might, you know, be in the same state you're in.
So, therefore, even the service industry...
Right, is outsourced. Mm-hmm.
...will replace the manufacturing.
Yes.
It's a bit because even that bit... But this is a bit of, right, call centers is outsourced.
Right.
Right. So what's left? The financial industry. And in the financial industry, is the rich to save money.
Yes. Amazing.
Right. And I think they realize that the hours at hand, their record is coming. At least. Okay.
Yes.
And, I don't know how. There should be a network of radio show, a network of all radio shows, and you all have to come together in and out.
Right.
It's not that difficult because, of course, you have all sorts of radio shows of right wing, left wing, whatever. Right? It doesn't mean if you are left, you are extreme, or right, you are extreme. Right? Because I think at the end of the day, whether you're right or left or middle, whatever.
Yeah.
Every spectrum, everyone across the African divide, realize that it means the collapse of your country. It means, right, hardship for your country. Then you have a common denominator. You must always unite at the minimum common denominator. Right? I work with, like, you'd be surprised, I organize conference, right, for global peace. I've invited the right wing, extreme right wing, to the extreme left. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me, look, I can't come to this conference because you have invited some left wing. Some loses. I can't come to the office because you invited the right wing. I can't come to the office because you invited the rabbis from Israel, right?
Uh-huh.
Or you invited some of this or some of that, you see? So they said you'll be a total failure.
Right. Well, that's kind of an artificial division that keeps us busy fighting with each other instead of looking for who the real culprits are.
Do you know what I'm trying to say is this? They have not had the experience of engaging constructively at the minimum common denominator.
Right.
It doesn't mean that if you are a Christian or a Muslim or a Buddhist, you don't share certain basic values or basic humanitarian values, right?
Mm-hmm. And
global peace is just one of them. It doesn't matter whether you're right or left. Surely, whether you're right or left, your son sent to another country, the Mexican, you don't want that to happen to your family.
Right.
So, and whether you are Muslim or Christian or Buddhist or Hindus or whatever, surely if your son has been wrongly sent to another country to wage war, you don't want that.
Right.
So I brought all these people here, okay, 50 speakers from all the world, different faiths, different political background. And when they arrived in Malaysia, to see, kind of eyeball to eyeball over each other, okay. So we told them, the speech from everyone must be focused on only one topic only. How do we promote global peace?
Ah.
Okay? Not in the sense of no war, right? But also peace in the sense of, right, internal peace within yourself. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And how to interact, right, with one another. Promote harmony so that we can work together on a common denominator.
Right. Well, our media in this country, they focus on division. They focus on lining two sides up. That is what they do, and it's so obvious.
So what happened was, like, having secured that, the understanding, right, it was such a pleasure to hear various speakers from various backgrounds, deeper backgrounds, intellectual background, religious background, cultural background, all speaking, nothing but peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And in the course of the week conference, where initially they couldn't even shake hands with each other, right, or want to meet each other in a small group, right, exchange, right, interaction. But as a result of this common denominator, sharing experiences. End of the day, we're simply going together. We issue a declaration for the Kuala Lumpur Declaration, right?
Mm-hmm.
War, to criminalize war. And they went back and spread the word. So I'm saying that you must take the initiative, regardless of what the people back now. Regardless of the people put whatever label, or this is a right wing radio or left wing radio, whatever, regardless of the label. Warn all your fellow countrymen. If we don't stop the slide to war, and focus on the economy, save our country, your country, from falling to the abyss, the financial abyss,
mm-hmm.
We're now at the edge of the precipice. That is more important. What is it? Minimum common denominator again, like all Americans, because of your divide, your race, your color, your religion, your culture, whatever. There you have something going on. Right? Because you can never, even within your own faith, or something, within your own faith, for example, whether you are Lutheran or Baptist or Catholic or Protestant, you can have absolute unity. Because you have different interpretation, right?
Right.
Of God's word or whatever. Yeah, in the Democratic Party, you have also the right wing of the Democratic Party and the left wing. In the Republican Party, you have also the right wing and left wing. Right? There will always be division.
Right.
Issues are very divisive. But you have to choose an issue that represents the lowest common denominator. You like them first at that level, then you go forward. Right?
Right.
What, and avoid giving labels. Oh, he's right wing, he's left wing, he's ultra, he's the ideologue. Forget about that. Is he or she willing to work with us on this hidden agenda that is expose the financial fraud, expose right the immense transfer of wealth from the majority to the minority, you claim back what you have lost and rebuild.
Right.
Everyone wants to build the country. Right?
Yes.
At the minimum. And if everyone do that, there will be no war. Because no one will stand for war. Because why should you build tanks and airplanes? Right?
Exactly. When we could be building our infrastructure, which certainly does need replacing. It's falling apart.
The same principle of the tank, the tech queens, right?
Yes.
Are used for tractors, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The bulldozers. Because you recall, before the Second World War, America was the number one industrial country.
Right.
All the big machines. When war came, the same factory was transformed to build tanks. Alright? Overnight. Caterpillar was building tanks and all these things. Right? Trucks for delivery of goods became trucks for delivery of divisions. Alright? Same trucks. Same truck company. So likewise, companies is producing armaments can easily retool to produce, right?
Right.
Goods, equipment, transportation for civilian use. Simple as that. Okay. So, we have to do that. We have to tell the people, right, that their factory that can produce tanks can produce as much tractors, right?
Right, we need to build plowshares instead of swords, like it says in the Bible.
Precisely. And it's not that difficult, right, to unite people. Okay? If we bear in mind that we must work at the lowest common denominator.
Right.
At the same time, we must also unite against that minority, but identify and focus who is the obstruction. Who is the enemy?
Mm-hmm.
The fraudsters, the banksters.
Yes.
Even the right, okay, would not want to be fleeced by their banks.
Right. Nobody wants to be fleeced by the banks.
Right. Other than the people in Washington, D.C., in Congress and in Senate, right, you can write them off.
Right.
Maybe one or two. The rest, you can work with.
Right. And of course they spin this, the politicians and the media spin things so that any criticism of the big corporations or the big banks is seen as coming from people who resent people who are better off than they are. They always portray the poor people as communist or something like that. It's just ridiculous how they spin things so that the bankers look like legitimate business people, when in fact they're the biggest criminals.
So on one hand, is it right? Less government, economy?
Yes, yes.
Less regulation.
Absolutely.
But they are the one for the most money. From Bernanke, $16 trillion.
Yes.
Right. No, that's why I don't understand why Americans can't see. I mean,
they're just not looking.
Yeah, the bankers don't even constitute 1%. The 1% rich, right, comprised of other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gays, whatever, right? I'm not against them. But bankers themselves, right?
Right.
2%. You follow me? But they're getting 16 trillion.
Yes.
What is the ordinary Americans getting? They can't even, they only have 6 months, right? Unemployment, right? Benefits, right? Thereafter, they're left on their own. Can you imagine? $2 trillion will be sufficient, right?
Yes.
Unemployment onto the job. if that 2 trillion is employed and invested properly and not in bad investments. So it's to me it's disgusting, really heinous for Bernanke, after the audit of the Fed, without any remorse, says that, right, was ready to do to give 16 trillion, of which a chunk, right, went overseas to rescue foreign banks.
Right.
Which means that the only those expenses doesn't even come into the picture as a priority.
Right.
Foreign banks. Alright? So, I think this fact, right, cannot be disputed, because it has come out in Washington Journal. Okay? It's come in a lot of the leading financial analysis, right? Website, Holden's website, like Zero Hedge, and others, right? Where these figures cannot be disputed, it's official. It's in Congress. It's not a lie, it's not a hype, it's not, a disinformation. It's not official figures, 16 trillion. Mind-boggling.
It is. It is totally mind-boggling.
Yet, funny thing enough, Tina, is that this is not even raised in the convention of both parties.
Well, they're covering it. I mean, government, the banks get away with this because the government allows it, because they are in bed with the bankers, because they go to Congress as moderate people. They come back as millionaires. These people who supposedly are elected to serve the best interest of the American people are only serving their own interest, and they are as criminal as the bankers that they allow to get away with this stuff.
I mean, but people like us, right, looking from outside, we are to me, majority people are not as educated or as rich or as many media as the newspapers.
Right. Talk louder.
I'm saying that we don't have as much newspapers or magazines as America.
Ah.
Or television channels or what have you. So despite all the availability of all the media, those expects is still ignorance, because the media is controlled by a few corporations.
Sure, of course.
Therefore, knowing that fact, either people like yourself, the radio show, and all the other alternative media must really reach out to counter this onslaught and bring the truth up to the people, because, alright? We don't have to go on too many issues, right? But go for the juggler. For me, if I'm in America today, alright, I will emphasize, can anyone justify 16 trillion to the bankers and not to six banks? How can any politicians justify that it's better to spend 16 trillion on the banks and not 1 trillion more or 1 billion for the 26 banks?
Right.
And we can tear them to pieces in any debate. In any debate. Alright? How are they going to justify giving trillions? At least, and I was told 5 trillions were given to foreign banks, mainly British banks.
Ah, so terrible.
Okashai Bank, Barclays Bank, Lloyds Bank, and a couple of Deutsche Bank in Germany, and UBS, I think, in Switzerland. Okay. How can you justify that? Surely the own government, all right, should be responsible for the own banks, right?
Right.
So I'm so surprised, that even some of these very famous, like Democracy Now, whatever.
Oh, they would never cover this.
Nicely. Right? Or other radio shows or TV shows, right? So, therefore, if they don't cover it, I think you can do that.
Right. If they don't cover it, they're part of the problem.
Yeah. You have to pose questions. Right? Let people think. I think one of the art of propaganda is, right, make people think. Sometimes it's good to talk, you know.
Yes.
But after that, pose questions. Why? When you start thinking, their mind will start working. They start inquiring. Alright? Because if you don't inquire, you just give them a one-way traffic information, you'll think that like you are part of the conspiracy theories.
Right.
It's too outlandish. Like I said, I went through that phase where when I said that it's 800 trillion, even the top economists, my friends, were saying, yeah, out of my mind. And I kept quiet. I just said, have you done the research? Have you gone to the Fed website? Have you gone to the Office of the Control of Currency, OCC website? Have you done all this research? I said, no. How can you say, I'm not? I asked these people. So I give them the websites. I give them the source of my research. I even post a reward in the newspaper that in my data, those figures, derivatives, is wrong. I pay them $10,000.
Wow.
If I'm right, they give me $1,000. So far, I have not lost.
Right.
You see, so it just goes to show that, see, the more outlandish the figures, they're not afraid, the bankers, the Fed, right, the people in Washington D.C., they know that they can get away with giving 16 trillion. They know they can get away with giving 200 billion because when someone sells those specs, you don't know that those forces in Washington D.C. has given up trillions to the banks. Joseph will say, like, come on, it's crap, it's conspiracy. Because it's too outlandish. Because in their entire life, they can't even visualize or will experience, right, a million in their pocket.
Right, right.
So don't talk about even a million. Don't talk about trillions or billions. They can't even understand the trillion, a million. So the bankers and the forces, right, and the people elites know that no matter what you say, they will not believe you.
Right.
And therefore, we have to break it down. Break it down. That, alright, this trillions is not in the system. It's not part of the GDP. It's not even part of the banking system. It's in the shadow banking. We call it shadow banking system. A bank is a money lender. That's how I call my book, right? The shadow money lenders.
Right, right.
So, I mean, otherwise, they won't understand what is a bank. A bank is, in effect, a money lender. Alright? A Shylock, you know?
Right.
Okay? So, we have to put it up in simple terms for them and say these are not the actual US dollar notes, the greenbacks in your pocket. Alright? With the face of Thomas Jefferson and whatever, in Washington. Right? It's a virtual money in a computer. The digits in the computer.
Right.
Alright? And you can actually show them how you can create the digits. And that's how I explain the derivatives, right, in my book, in the introduction. How they can create, right, money out of thin air. Okay? The total sum of 10 million. It's a creation in a computer. So you need an illusion to them, you know. Joe, right? If they can do it, why can't we do it?
Right.
Follow me? The only thing is, we don't have the power. We don't have the military. We don't have the police. We don't have the FBI. We don't have the CIA. We don't have the DIA.
Right.
But I think people understand, right? If he's break it down into simple bites, small bites, and not get involved in technical jargon, you know, using simple analogy, right, and say, right, if your entire life you can't even earn a million, and just show, extract, show them the website, you know, the OCC website, Office of Corporate Currency, show them the website of the Bank of Digital Settlement, and say, look, I didn't say, there you are, you see it on the website, there you are, what do you say? How many trillions? Is that a typo? it's not a mistake. They say trillions. And a trillion is 1,000 billion. They didn't even say billion. Let them see. You know? Get them.
Right.
The link and say to your listeners, please don't trust me. Do yourself a favor. Just click on the mouse. To this link. You see for yourself. Then call me back. Make them do the work.
Yes. Well, you know, people are always people who discover the truth and are led to the truth, and then they can see it, will find it more credible than just listening to somebody talk about it. But if they feel like they have discovered it, I think it's more important.
So for those attempts who are foreclosed, tell them, right?
Right.
You've been defrauded. I mean,
yes. Big defraud.
Mm-hmm. Where a bank foreclosed on a house, and the foreclosed family took on a challenge to court and says, right, they can't foreclose. And court agreed. Why? Because they couldn't prove that they had the title.
Right.
Because that original mortgage was sold so many times over, right? They were back at each level. Excuse me, they were buying a piece of paper and they didn't take possession of the title. Okay, no one knew where the title was. Okay, so they were just signing papers, right? And so when the judge asked, right, bank, where is your mortgage? You don't have it, you got this paper. Well, who did he buy this paper from? Bank A. Ask Bank A, where did he get the paper from? From Bank B. He went on and on. Just says, I'm sorry. Law is very simple. No mortgage, no foreclosure.
Yes, and people need to start doing this. People need to use the law for their benefit.
So here's a simple idea. You get a mortgage. You don't have a mortgage title, you can't speak that foreclosure. But people are so trusting.
Yes.
They know that they defaulted, right? So they have this good conscience. Okay, you default. Doesn't mean the bank is unique. You still have rights. The bank can only foreclose if they have right to foreclose. If you don't have the title, they can't foreclose. Period.
Right.
A simple right, procedure. Alright? To protect yourself. So people must be empowered to know their rights, to know some of the procedure, and how the fraud has been made.
Right.
I think from there, we can do a lot of things in the future.
Right.
Because if they don't understand, they can't oppose the law. It'll be very difficult because the government will give all kinds of spin, right? You said it's a threat to our civilization, it's a threat to our livelihood. What livelihood are you talking about? If they're foreclosed, and you're on the first step. Was the foreclosure at first step because of some jihadists in some caves in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Number five?
Yes, we need to recognize who the criminals are.
The foreclosure in the first camps and the 10 cities has nothing to do with the jihadists.
No.
It's got to do with the banks in Wall Street and those politicians in Congress in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So that when they say, let's go to war because they hate us, then you see it, right?
Indeed.
I hate you because you foreclosed me. You defrauded me.
Yes.
Channel my anger against you to somewhere else.
Right, right. And that's what they've done. Just projected the anger elsewhere. What a concept. Amazing. Well, Matthias, I really, really appreciate you being on the program. It's been very revealing, and you explained things so well that I hope the listeners will purchase your book, go to your website, read what you've said, and start using the law for their benefit, and start recognizing who the cabal is, and that it is not somebody in a foreign country. It is the people right here in their own country. So, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and God bless you.
God bless you too, also. Thank you. Bye-bye.